Feel anything, Chloe?
It's not a thing. The scanning thing is painless.
You hear that, viewers?
So how do you play?
Easy.
Two different tribes fighting each other to find the magic key.
Whoever has the magic key has power over Game City.
Each tribe is represented by a color, blue and red. You're a blue. So get in there and zap everyone before they zap you.
Bad, this isn't gonna hurt or anything, is it?
Relax, Chloe. You're gonna have the time of your life.
Welcome to Series 4, Episode 35 of Conversation on Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hi.
Sabine.
Hey.
And Tamsin.
Hi.
We have episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 4, Episode 35, the screenplay was done by Tony Osborne. It was directed by Ian Moon, and the episode synopsis were read out by Sabine.
Siva's new life gets off to a rocky start. Work starts on a promised hospital, but Jay is frustrated with the lack of help and the priority given to the new reality space game, where a familiar face is playing to win.
Before we dive into the really crazy stuff, let's open with the previous episode's cliffhanger, which leads to Jay tricking Pride in order to get close before knocking him unconscious. Though concerned, Jay has more pressing issues.
What about the hospital?
I can't leave him like this.
Celine, they're bringing equipment, medicines, manpower. If we're not there to accept it, Ram will just say forget it. Couldn't Mouse and Sammy look after him?
Frustrated about this and worried about the power of the game, Celine forcibly enlists Mouse and Sammy to look after Pride and forbids them from watching the game. So panel, what do you make of the rescue of Pride, Jay's priorities, and the general apathy and grace continually given to the Technos, all despite everything that they have done?
Is it the Technos, or is it Jay, that gets the apathy and the grace?
The Technos. Even Patch was like, oh, yeah, it's just a game. Like, Patch, they took your brother.
Yeah.
How are you still? They're good guys. It's just a game. It doesn't matter. Like, no, you can't still be like that. Come on. This is apathy to the Technos.
Yep.
But then we had Mice and Sammy kind of scream when they saw Siva going, there's one here. So, I mean, yeah, it flip-flops, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. They like the things they bring them. They don't like the actual people.
It's probably some of the worst writing and editing I think the show's ever had. I literally started this thinking I missed an episode. And I had to keep reminding myself, no, you watched last week's episode. You watched the last episode. It gave you depression, remember? And I was like, trying to like, did you block some of it out? I'm like, I really felt like I had missed an episode because the way this is written and the way everyone's acting, I was like, wait, what? What is happening here? I thought I had a handle on what was going on, and this felt like I had read like the first few chapters of a book, and then I just decided to see what, you know, I just skipped ahead a little bit to see if it gets interesting or better or whatever. Mm. And it's all out of context, and it shouldn't be because it's literally right after the last episode, and it's not like there's a time jump or anything like that. And I was like sitting there like racking my brain. Maybe I missed something. Maybe I didn't watch the last scene, or what did I miss? Why is this so confusing, this setup for this episode? Aside from Pride, you know what I mean? Like, I don't even know where to begin to unpack how badly this is done. Why, out of all the people, to have to explain how dangerous the Technos are, or why she doesn't want them to watch the game, would Celine have to say that to Patch?
Mm-hmm.
Why would Patch, of all people, like, I get her saying to the kids, like, you're not watching this. It's been set up for the kids to be excited and not seem to recognize the danger, mm-hmm. all that. It doesn't make sense for Patch in this moment to say it's just a game, to be there with the kids, like, If Celine comes in and says, I don't want you guys watching this, Patch of all people should understand, yeah, you know, makes sense that she's saying that since, you know, they did something to Pride. And he may not know that he was on the roof, but he knows Pride didn't come home normal. He knows that. He's aware of that. You know, he is the one person we found in the city who still had a problem with the Technos. He's apparently the only person in the city who still had a problem with the Technos. And what, a week in the mall, and he's just like, oh, the Technos aren't so bad. You know what I mean? It's like, this is really bad writing. This is terrible that she has to tell Patch, of all people, and remind him of what the Technos have done. That... she shouldn't have to say this to him. I'm like, who wrote this?
You know what it made me feel like? It made me feel like this was written to be said to, you know, someone like Jack, who would actually be excited about the bloody game, but wouldn't have the same level of issues with it that Patch does, because no siblings taken. Like, that I could understand, but it's like someone wrote it thinking, well, oh, this is the new nerdy guy, so must be the same. Must respond the same.
It's so strange. Do you think they had any conversations between writing the scripts? You know, did they just go and write them in isolation?
This is what is seeming like more and more. Like, there is no conversation between the writers. Like, they're just picking up and doing their own thing. Like, how is there no thorough through? How is none of this connected to each other? Like, it's like he's picked up the notes for Patch and just missed, oh yeah, his brothers were taken away and he was involved in the whole situation with Amber. Like, how is he not aware of any of this for Celine to say this? It's crazy. It's actually crazy.
Because it seriously feels to me like, you know, the notes were Patch, likes computers, has glasses,
mm-hmm.
must be a nerd. So that's why we speak to him this way, without any context of who Patch is and what his backstory is.
Mm.
It's ridiculous.
This writing,
it reminds me of that game Heads, Bodies, and Legs, where somebody will draw the head and then they'll fold it over. Somebody else will draw the body and they'll fold that over, and somebody else will draw the legs. And then you sort of unfold it and see what sort of creature you've created. But the reference note is they've never seen a human, you know?
Mm-hmm. But yeah, this whole scene was problematic. Like, and I don't just mean the fact that, Jay, that was a total missed opportunity. You could have just shoved him over and get Pride done with. Because, let's face it, I actually like the fact that Jay just goes for bodily harm to get Pride to snap out of things.
Mm.
It's honestly, for this moment in time, the only way he could deal with him.
I like the Pride's first reaction to them coming up there going, Pride, he's like, leave me alone. I don't know why. I just thought that was like, I, because they're going for so majestic and dramatic, and it just, mm-hmm. there's something incongruent with that kind of response, you know, considering the way Pride usually talks.
Mm-hmm.
And this just this very basic, leave me alone. I was like, that was very succinct. He's having the time of his life right now, and you're bothering him. Go away. I don't know if I liked it or hated it, but I found it very amusing that there wasn't this more dramatic, you know, intonation to what he was saying. You know, like, oh, you guys, can you see it? Can you see what I can see? No, just leave me alone. Go away. Like, there were just flies buzzing around his head. I don't know. Interesting choice.
I really like the, I think it was like a kimono style jacket that he was wearing with the hood. I love that. That was a really nice piece. It had feathers on it, and it had sort of, I think it might have been silk. If you have to sort of jump off a building, you could definitely wear worse things to do it in. You know, Pride has style in that moment.
You need the wind machine, though. Like, that's an important element for that. If you're going to do it, you got to have that kimono and the wind machine.
Yeah. And you need to have it on the Beyonce setting.
Yeah.
What did we think of Jay being the one to rescue Pride, though?
Of course he had to be the one to rescue Pride. Because we all have to find Jay a magnificent human being.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going all out now on presenting him as...
Yeah, the moral savior, you know? And they, I mean, they assumed we cared about Pride, so...
I mean, it's not bad storytelling in the sense that when you have a character who's in the gray and you want to take advantage of any opportunity to show the good side as well as the nefarious things they're doing. This is, you know, plot writing, character renovation 101. Show that this is the kind of person he is. It's not like he hasn't tried to save Pride's life before, you know. But I do think that it's a detriment to Celine's character and the ways you can show her growth. And I do think this could have been more poignant considering Pride is standing where Celine has stood. Very different reasons why, but they don't really delve into how this could trigger someone like Celine, who has been on the edge of this roof wanting to jump. And to see the person she loves up there simply because he's lost his mind and have to talk him down, that could have been, you know, something amazing or just very interesting or compelling for her to have to go through, where instead she's just, you know, she's a background character to the scene. And it's like they don't even recognize that there's significance to the fact that Celine's on this roof again, this time trying to stop someone else from stepping off, you know, and hurting themselves. And it's just a shame. So it's like, I'm not so bothered that it's Jay. Like I said, if I were trying to renovate a character, retroactively paint them as more decent than I had initially introduced them as, and yes, I would, this is what you do. You have Jay try to save Pride's life again. But if I wanted to do something deeper, it's just a missed opportunity with Celine right there, you know, and there's no fault. There's no, we don't revisit it to see how this affected her seeing Pride up there, you know. Apparently it didn't trigger at all, which that's fine, I guess, but missed opportunity in my book.
Shall we press the button?
Yep.
We'd have to keep it on the whole episode.
We can have it just droning away like the alert that we got on our phones.
Yep, just in the background.
Yeah, take cover.
Whatever that means.
that's only if you're, you know, on the ground floor outside of the mall, in case a saving of Pride goes wrong.
Oh yeah, good point.
Oh my gosh! I finally just thought that. Oh, that's chugging real slow.
There's a reason we never see anyone walk outside the mall at that point.
Oh my word! That was twisted.
But it's interesting though. Like we've had Pride trying to save Jay from being completely gone and electrocuted. And now we have Jay grabbing Pride from, well, attempted flight.
Oh, they're going to be buddies now, aren't they? You saved my life, I saved yours, sort of rubbish.
Well, they think it's a theme. They think it's a very deep theme that they're delving into with Jay and Pride. If the writing was better, it could have been an actually nice follow through of their story of these two people on opposing sides and ideologies who are having trouble finding common ground. And, you know, Pride starts off hating Jay. And I don't know what Jay starts off with, you know, whatever Jay is. And, but then, you know, the electric fence thing happens. Pride gets stuck. Jay jumps up there to help him, and then they're both electrocuted, and then Pride revives, you know, Jay, and he's got some confusion about why he bothered to do that, on and on. Then you get this scene with, you know, Pride out of his mind and who knows what he's going to do, and Jay doesn't hesitate to save his life, and then all the way to the end of the season when Pride once again is taken over by the game and nearly kills Jay, who he's hunting down, and manages to snap out of it somehow and doesn't kill him. If the writing was better, if the storytelling, the characterizations, that could have been a nice through line of these two people from opposing sides who are actually decent human beings, where when you get to the bottom of it, this is who they really are at their core. But unfortunately, yeah, it doesn't work because the characterizations, the writing, the storytelling, all of that doesn't come together. But I can see that's what they were going for with those two. I want to know why they even suggested Mouse and Sammy to look after Pride. they made me forget that Patch was in the mall. Like, they made me forget Patch exists. Like, you know, clearly they get Pride downstairs, and so they gotta go, though. They gotta go to the hospital. They gotta take care of stuff. They gotta be there to get the equipment and whatnot. And Jay's not wrong, you know? And it's like, Celine doesn't want to leave him. He's like, well, can't you get, like, Mouse and Sammy to look after him? And I was like, yeah, I guess there's no one else, right? But then there was Patch, and I was like, why would you ever suggest the kids when Patch is right there? Like, I don't understand how Patch is written into the story as one of the Mallrats.
Mm-hmm.
When he is always treated like an outsider for some reason by everybody. I don't get it. Wouldn't you pick the next adult in the building to look after him, not the two kids who literally can't be trusted to do what they're supposed to do? And when I saw Patch at the table, I was like, oh yeah, Patch, you exist. Why didn't they suggest you? Why didn't, when Celine saw you at the table, tell you to watch Pride? And then, of course, the way the writing has it, she has to scream at him for, you know, downplaying the dangerousness mm-hmm. of the game. And I'm like, why was Patch even brought in? I mean, aside from the logistics, we need somebody who's good at all these random things. Why just to treat him this way? Like, he doesn't belong here, and he's unwanted by basically everyone.
You know what I was also wondering in this? Do they already know Chloe is missing?
Not yet.
No, but they just know she's not there. They just know she's not in the building. In the same way they know Lex isn't there. Like, you know those are not two dependable people you can count on to help, because they're just never around. They're always doing their own thing.
Fair.
I mean, I think both you and Sabine, Liz, have struck a chord with Pride previously when you said, and I mean, I think this can go into Pride's characterization, Patch's characterization, sorry, which is it's plot moving character instead of character moving plot. And like you say, he's just there to be a kind of catch-all. We need someone with all of these skills, so that's how we'll use him. But
yeah,
that's it.
We don't have Jack and Al.
Yeah, so he is Jack and Al. Rather than apportion skills to, you know, like Dee, yes, she works with Lex, but she could also maybe have some medical know-how. That might have been quite interesting. But instead of that, it's just, no, we'll just have another character that we'll put all this on. But also, it feels like the mall, again, is getting smaller. The pool of people that are actually available to watch Pride, like, you've got Patch, who Celine... I mean, the joke is Celine and Jay must have walked past him to get Pride into his room, because we know that Pride's on that upper level. So that's strange to begin with, but it feels like the pool's shrinking even more. There's hardly any characters there in the mall. And we started out with hardly any, and we've got even less. And the ones we have got, nobody's developing.
Mm-hmm.
Is Patch truly such a quiet person that they simply forget he's there?
And he's not quiet, is he? Because, like, he's always bumping into stuff. That would make a noise.
Well, we know Celine just hates him. And so she probably forcibly writes him out of her mind every opportunity she gets.
But didn't Celine ask him to join?
No, that was D.
Or was it D? Oh, okay.
We'll see.
Well, maybe that's a factor then, because Dee's not really a mole rat either, is she?
Yeah, well,
the writing sucks. It's just
yeah.
Like, this is literally the highlight of the episode, and it just dies for me from here on. It's just
who would have thunk the highlight of the episode is Pride threatening to throw himself off a building, and that it has nothing to do with us hating him. It's just the highlight. Like, it's the most interesting, coherent thing happening that we can follow. We understand how he got there and what's happening. That's the highlight. Not because it's good, but because it's comprehensive.
Right. What happens next is like
everything that follows is just like scattergories.
Oh boy.
I mean, it's almost as if they didn't have enough A roll, and a lot of this is B roll, and they cobbled something together.
That's exactly how it feels. It feels completely like that. Like, that's what I felt like I was watching. I was like, how many scenes got cut out? Because there's so much missing. And there's a couple places they reference or hint at a better scene. And I'm like, why didn't we see that one? Mm-hmm. I would have actually preferred to watch that.
Yes.
Why did you not film that or show that scene? You know, and instead it was, yeah, it was just cobbled together. It's like flipping through channels and you're just seeing interesting things from many different shows, but you... it's all out of context and you don't know which one you want to watch, you know? And
yeah,
I was confusion the whole time. I wasn't even, actually, you guys, my grief journey is in a weird place today. I'm not at bargaining. I'm actually stuck between, and I'm not at depression anymore. I'm actually stuck between denial and anger. Like, I'm looking for someone to blame. I'm like, okay, who on the panel is to blame for me being stuck dealing with this? Like, it's one of those guys who is at fault that I'm here watching this incomprehensive mess.
That would be me. That would be me.
It's one of you guys. Because there's no way in my right mind that I would be here by choice. That's how I felt. I was just like, okay, who's at fault for this? I need to find the person.
You know who's at fault for this.
And the denial is that I put myself in the situation that this is happening and I have complete control over the situation.
Yeah, no, out of all the episodes, this particularly feels stuck together with sellotape. It is shoddy. Mm. At best.
They were out of duct tape.
Right. And for good reason, as we'll now get into...
Are you ready to take
this on? This is unacceptable. I mean, firstly, they don't even want to be scanned, and after this little piece of PR, they're not exactly going to want to play, are they? What is Ben thinking? Where is he?
Doing his stuff at the scanning center, I guess.
You haven't seen this before?
Well, he wouldn't let me.
You're in charge of PR. You don't let Ved tell you what to do.
Frustrated with the poor efforts from Ved to sell the game to the Verts, Ram once again takes matters into his own hands. As Ved uses eager volunteer Chloe to show the city that it's all safe within a live broadcast, Ram uses his skills to hack Chloe's gaming avatar and convert it to look like the previously missing May. After a series of game scenes, we are presented with a confusing aftermath, as Chloe, who is in May's avatar by the way, is sent out of the game to reload. However, May herself returns to where Chloe initially was with Ved. Ved, confused, is unable to understand where Chloe went, and of course neither do we. So, panel, yes, before we try to make sense of any of this, we of course have to discuss the backstage events which led to this whole confusing scenario. So if any listeners who weren't aware of the situation with Chloe's actress, Jamie, she had a off-screen relationship with Ved's actor, Aiden, and they went missing for a day when they were supposed to be filming, which led to both of their contracts being suddenly terminated. However, the powers that be decided to keep Aiden on to wrap up the storyline and get rid of Jamie straight away. And if you want to find out more about these backstage events, you can check out an interview I did with both Jamie and Dan. Just check out thetribe.co.uk/interviews. So, yeah, let's start with how do you feel about the sudden loss of Chloe and obviously this backstage happening?
It's strange to think that this is the last time we're ever going to see Chloe. And this is how she goes out. It's just, it's really sad.
I don't know the internals, you know, I don't know what else was going on besides that information you shared, but it does seem unfair and it seems like an extreme reaction to the crime, I guess. Given the age of these actors, this is a proven actress that you've had since she was a child. Now, was there more difficulties with her behind the set and this was the last straw? I don't know, you know, but it just seems a bit extreme that two very young people who like each other are acting like two very young people who like each other. And it also seems unfair to just immediately ditch one. You're like, you're gone. We're not even going to make sense writing you out. We're not even going to try to make sense writing you out, but we're going to keep the other one on so that we can fizzle the story out. That seems very unfair. You know, they both did the same thing. So why weren't they both handled the same way?
Right.
Like I said, I don't know. Maybe there's a history of the actress who played Chloe causing difficulty. Maybe she lost interest. Maybe it was starting to show. I don't know any of that. It's not even my business. But it just, it seems once again, a young actor who left not of their own volition. And I don't know if they were treated fairly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that just seems to be the theme. Any actor who didn't leave because they genuinely wanted to, because they had something to do, it doesn't feel like they were treated very fairly when they were removed from the show, which never sits well with me, because we're talking about a bunch of minors, and I'm wondering, where are the protections for these kids?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. As I was, like, struggling to put this into words, I was thinking, like, the amount of... Well, the limited safeguards they had in place with these child actors anyway. But, like, this is not proportionate. Like, I understand they missed a whole day's filming. I understand the money and the time and the pressures that all goes with that. But these are young children, and they're already under immense pressure that the whole setup of filming this has put them under. Like, this is unfair. And to single out Jamie in particular, not fair at all.
I mean, I also think it's forever tainted. It's connected forever with her being on the show as well, at the exit,
mm-hmm.
because it's so contentious. And I mean, how many of us have done stupid things as kids? I wouldn't want that stuff kind of brought... Do you know what I mean? And to kind of carry it around. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not let her finish even a couple of last scenes, like,
yeah. She deserves that. She deserves the chance to just finish it out
after all the pressures of filming. Yeah,
I think these contracts are very questionable that they have these kids under.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, you have a contract. Are there no protections in this contract where you can just fire them on the spot? Like, you can just do whatever you want to them? Like, where the, it's like a bad, you know, that stupid adage about a job. You're at a job and they want you to show them consideration if you're going to leave the job by giving them time to replace you. So they want like 2 weeks notice, mm-hmm. but they can just fire you at the drop of a hat. You don't get any notice mm-hmm. so that you can get a new job or anything like that. It feels like that. And it's just like, what are with these contracts? It really. And I think Tamsin said it best. It taints everything. It doesn't just taint what happened to the actress who played Chloe. It taints everything about the show, because it's just one more in a long line of young actors who was dismissed as if they never mattered.
Yeah.
And I can't, it just sucks when you start taking in your media with a little bit of responsibility, and it's something you enjoy, and then you learn later that maybe the actor or the singer or the entertainer, whoever, was not being treated fairly when this thing you love was being created. It taints it for you, mm-hmm. you know? And mm-hmm. I can't, it really bothers me thinking about how these actors were treated. And it was like, who was protecting them?
Yeah.
She never worked in film again after this.
Right. I'm like, I don't even know she did any projects after this.
No.
This had a massive impact. Yeah. And again, I don't want to put aspersions on the higher ups, but to single out Jamie and not Aiden,
yeah,
it says a lot. It does say a lot.
I'd also say, you know, that her character had been sidelined for quite a while. We were seeing less and less of her for quite some time. So yeah, but then. Well, you just don't know how to slice this that would make it any better, because it's just bad.
Like, they could have at least filmed a couple of scenes just to make it seem like, or at least to make it make more sense.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, we don't want her here anymore, so we're gonna, you know, write it so she's suddenly just gone.
And it's yet again another character that we don't get any closure for.
Yeah, that, but...
But this is a veteran actor.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's what gets me.
I mean, as annoying as it was to lose someone like Alice or Patsy earlier on, at least it made sense that they were suddenly gone.
Mm.
At least they made a form of sense of it in the storyline.
Yeah,
And Chloe, it just...
But we have no closure for this. We have no closure for her at all.
Even Paul even made more sense.
Like you say, she's a veteran actor, and no respect for all that length of time.
From here on, you can just see the panic as they try to paint over what's happened. Because yeah, they everything is just badly stitched together to try and make some sense of her being missing, and it just falls apart. Obviously,
I resent that. I resent you saying they tried to make sense of it because I don't think anybody was trying to make sense of this.
Let me clarify. The editor,
yeah, you better clarify that.
To stitch this together to make some sense,
because I'm sorry, any real storyteller worth their salt could have made this make some sort of sense.
Oh yeah.
Okay. And they feel like they deliberately went out of their way to make it make the least amount of sense. Like, they didn't just want to get rid of her. They wanted to spit on her legacy. Like, she never even mattered.
That's kind of true. Okay. Yeah.
I'm so confused by what actually happened. I kind of need someone to explain it to me. Because also,
if any of you try to make sense of this, I will reach to the screen and punch you in the face.
I just don't understand.
There is no sense. Come on, there is no sense. May is suddenly in the spot where Chloe was. It makes no sense. Don't try.
May brought a chair with her and a headset.
That was obviously filmed afterwards. So. Yeah, it's bad. It is bad. We can't make sense of it.
Ben is literally filming this live, and I just want you to think of the logistics. Remember, Chloe's not actually going anywhere. She's just getting some wires. She's just getting a headset hooked up to her head while there's a camera filming her, because again, this is live, okay? And she's not going to go anywhere. She's just going to stand there and probably close her eyes, and in her head, she'll be in this game, and then what's in the game is being projected to everybody. Mm-hmm. But that means Ved is still standing there in the room with her, along with all the other technos who are with her, okay? So if you wanted this to make sense, you could have her in a room by herself, like Ved steps out for whatever reason, though why would he? You know, he's filming this live.
Well, if he steps out for, like, Ram demanding him to come, you know...
Right, you can have him have to leave the physical space that Chloe's in, and then when he returns, it's not Chloe, it's another person that he doesn't recognize, and the headset, everything is different, and he's trying to cover up his confusion. You could film it that way, and that would be them trying to make sense of what happened. But no, we're supposed to believe she vaporized in front of him, and a new person materialized in a whole different room, new equipment... They were not trying to make sense of this at
There's
all.
There's no sense, yeah.
And I won't stand for a single person trying to defend what happened here.
Oh, no, I'm not, no way I'm not defending it. I'm saying the editor,
I won't hear it! I won't hear it!
Even worse, though.
And then all these kids in the city as well. They've seen Chloe being the one.
That makes it even worse, yes. Thank you, Sabine. That made it even worse. That everyone's watching. The whole city's watching Chloe go in, and no one questions May coming out. It's
like, no! Whatever.
What's going on?
Well, this tells me that something else was filmed entirely.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Chloe in the game. Something else was filmed entirely, and in their petty decision to get rid of her, get rid of the actress, they had to do pickup shots with May, because of course there's no continuity. May's in a different room, she's wearing a different headset, all that jazz. That's a pickup shot. That's something they had to go back and get. And they didn't change anything else. They were not trying to make sense of this whatsoever.
Mm. No, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Like, because normally you would have thought, okay, Chloe goes in, and she finds May in the game. Like, that must have been something like that originally. And they just decided to cut out that part.
I even wonder if they didn't especially get May back early because of she wasn't there. I don't know if she was meant to be back at this time. It's very... I'm not sure.
Yeah, they scrambled.
It feels like they scrambled to get her in now.
To be fair, they could have filmed... I mean, they probably filmed all this out of sequence. So that maybe they filmed when she was actually back. And they added it in.
They gave that actress some bargaining power when that phone call came in. Like, we need you to come back. We really, really need you. She's like, I want to be paid more. And you know what? More power to her. I hope she took advantage of that bargaining power. suddenly just come back into this ish show of a story. But yeah, it's so nonsensical, and it could have made some sense. It could have, you know, but yeah. It makes zero, and they weren't trying. I will give them zero credit. No stars for anybody on the team. Not even the editor. None of you get any stars.
We have spoken a lot about the Chloe Zed relationship being fairly undercooked, but it is a solid relationship that is held onto and held up in the fandom that we all love. Mm-hmm. And this is where it ends. We don't just lose Chloe. We also lose Chloe and Zed as a couple in this moment as well.
Yeah.
So it's not just an FU to anybody who is a Chloe fan, it's also an FU to all of those Chloe Veg fans. So how does that make them feel that this is how it ends so unsatisfactorily?
I think you said this yourself, Tamsin, before. I think the what comes after with Fed fighting for Chloe kind of cements this relationship for a lot of people in people's minds.
Yeah.
I think that's why it's elevated so much. I think without that, it would have just fizzled to nothing. But that moment, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, and people actively try to make sense of this by writing fanfic about what happened.
Right.
Like, the fact that it's such a mess might have helped with that.
And it's, you know what the thing is? It's a shame because I buy Ram getting rid of Chloe. I absolutely buy that. Of course he'd get rid of Chloe. He's annoyed with Ved. She's a distraction. That's something Ram would do. Get rid of Chloe.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think of the logistics, and then even that, he could physically, you know, like, you know, Sabine said, remove Ved from the vicinity for whatever reason so that Chloe can be removed from under his nose. And then he comes back to the room and Chloe's gone. And there's just another stranger there. And he has to play it off because he's on camera live. So he has to pretend everything's cool, even though he's like, what the frick is going on? I'm thinking about the logistics of where the frick May came from. Remember, May was taken in the invasion, shipped off to a prison camp someplace, because we don't know where the technos come from or where they take their prisoners or whatever, you know. Okay, I even buy that Ram was planning on, you know, this coup just for the funsies. But I'm just thinking the logistics of May specifically, a mole rat. I mean, they're really pressing the pentangle and all of that symbolism.
Yeah.
A mole rat, but not just a mole rat that sold out to the Chosen.
Like, where did you find her? How did you find any information on her? And when did you ship her in and get her in this room? Yeah. Only thing that's remotely interesting about this is that knowing, and of course they already implied that this was happening, that those who are taken are also having these experiments done to them. Cause as we'll see with May, she is neck deep in the sauce. You know what I mean? She's already been doing this and confused. She can't tell real from not real, da da da, all that jazz. But it's just, there are no words to describe how bad this is. I think it's like peak badness. No, I think Ram on the garbage tip night might be worse.
Well, it's close.
It's a close call.
It's so close. It's so close.
Oh, that is close.
It's battling it out in the Oscars for terribleness, you know?
Yeah.
That's the end of Chloe. I can't believe it. One of my favorite characters before season four. And this is what happened.
And there was still hope for her.
Yeah, there was that hope.
Even when your favorite characters go downhill in the writing, there's always hope that there'll be a comeback in the next season or something. The story can turn. Something can happen, you know? Mm. And no, it just felt petty. It felt retaliatory. Yeah.
I also thought it was interesting, and it shows how far we've come, because we had a lot of shots of May in the red-blue game, but it was Sammy and Mouse and Patch. You could not possibly have known who she was. And it just shows how the influx of new characters, But then I was confused because Pride was also watching the game and he didn't once see her.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's because all of the
He didn't know
she wasn't supposed to be there.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's all the reaction shots were filmed when it was apparently supposed to be Chloe in the game.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be someone they recognize in the game. Because again, none of the reaction shots show anybody showing that they've seen that one person went in and it's a completely different person they're following in this first person shooter, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Nobody reacts to that. Nobody, not even like, oh, cool, she changed her avatar or whatever. There's nothing. Mm. There's no reaction to it. And that's why it's because all the shots of May are pickup shots that were done after whatever happened with Chloe happened, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's why you've got Pride watching the game and not reacting to the fact that his last booty call's in there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep.
Is in there.
Apparently, yeah.
He doesn't, you know, immediately flip the screen off when, you know, Celine shows up, like, ha! Yeah, I wasn't watching anything. Nothing. There's no reaction to seeing that it's May. There's nothing, you know? So mm-hmm. It's like, all of those were taken before the pickup shots. All of those reactions were filmed before May was brought back.
Yeah, but, and that makes it so crazy, because if it had originally been meant to be Chloe, surely they would have had, the kids would have had some reaction to, oh, what's Chloe doing?
Or some concern.
Come on, Chloe, win.
I mean, I guess parts of that could have been cut off, but yeah, it was badly done. I mean, we were trying to make sense of all of this, but
it's nonsensical.
But we can't. I can't find a way to make sense of this.
And let's be honest. Chloe and Ved taking off, yes, that's wrong. They shouldn't have done it, you know. But I'm hard-pressed to believe that the day of filming they lost was so valuable to this story that they ruined it. I don't believe that. I don't believe the story was any better, you know. Like, I really don't. Given where the story has been going, I really don't think much was lost, okay? I'm just going to accept money. That's it. Story quality, I don't think any of that was lost. I hate to break it to you guys, you creatives, but no. I don't think they ruined anything.
I'm just sitting here suddenly thinking with so they already had May at the studio for some shot with Chloe later on, maybe. And the actress for Chloe and Ved didn't show, so they just went, okay, what are we going to do now? Okay, well, May's here.
It was definitely a lot later. I think it was definitely a lot later when Laura Wilson came back.
A bummer, because I like Laura Wilson. I like the character of May. She's not a favorite, but I like her more than most do. And her return is even soured by how they handled all this.
Oh, yeah, that's true, yeah.
It's like, instead of us being like, oh, awesome, it's May, you know, it's a mall rat, you know, it's one of those people we lost. Instead, we're just caught up in the confusion of what is this they're serving to us, and she gets lost in the shuffle, and she deserved better than that.
She deserved more.
That's true.
I will say, though, I can remember watching this episode and being more focused on the return of May, because I didn't yet realise that we weren't going to see Chloe again. So I was excited at the fact that another Mallrat had come back, because I was like, well, if we've got her back, maybe we'll get Tyson back.
Yeah.
Because of all the characters who've returned, this is one of the most compelling we've ever gotten when you really think about it. This is someone who was taken in an invasion, and we only got hints of what was likely being done to them. And not to mention, she's got all this story that, you know, from the past with Pride and Celine and all kinds of stuff. And she's back. Like, that's one of the most compelling comebacks we've gotten, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, even Amber's back from the dead is not as compelling because of how dumb it's handled. But May's could have been magnificent, but no, it's completely squandered.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like Tamsin on this. Like, I was instantly wondering, okay, so May's back. Who else is going to be back? Is it going to be Bray or Alice, you know, or maybe even Allie?
And even back, my first reaction to seeing this, I was too annoyed at the confusion to be happy to see May. instead of being like, oh, wow, it's May. Are they bringing people back? Instead, my reaction is, where the frick did you just come from? Like, that was my first thought. Where did you just come from? What is going on? Mm. I was so confused by everything. I was like, what is happening here?
Mm-hmm. I'm also going to say, again, they spoiled her return in the closing credits. Because we'd already known that she was coming back.
I already
back.
Knew I would see her again. That's true, too. I'd already seen the scene of May in the game getting the key, which those credits piss me off because they make the season actually look good. Yeah. And it is not. And so I knew I'd see May again, you know, and from the first episode. And but I was like, this is how we got her? What the frick is happening?
Oh, boy. Oh yeah, we'll hold off on discussing Ved's portion of the storyline until it comes up. But just to kind of finish this off, what do you make of the concept itself of the Red versus Blue gaming setup?
That's a good premise for a game. It's a first person shooter. It's an RPO. That's a good game. I will give them credit. If you're gonna create a game that people can get addicted to. And people are very tribal in nature. I mean, it's literally called the tribe, teams, a quest, fighting the other. I'm like, this is a good concept for a game that you're going to get a bunch of people addicted to. I don't have a problem with the game itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing that you could possibly say about the game is it maybe would have been a bit more interesting if they had given them some costumes that were red and blue instead of just sticking a bandana on their head and having them in what they essentially were taken in. Like, you'd have had them in that's the only thing I would say. Although I actually think we do get that, don't they? Because they're wearing boiler suits. So edit that out. I don't know what I'm talking about.
No, agree with you that their costuming could have been done a little better. I will forgive them a little bit because of budgeting and costuming a bunch of people. But again, you're selling the idea this is a virtual world. Their avatars could be wearing anything.
Yeah.
You know, and I do think that their costume choices could have been far more creative, even if they were simple. But then again, we've seen the techno uniforms. The budget was thin on the ground for costuming. I don't know what's going on there.
There was so much blue fabric left over from The Chosen, though.
But they could. Again, you're selling the fact that this world, anything can happen. And I think they took too big of a concept that they couldn't sell, you know? Like, the concept is big. It's a virtual world where anything's possible, and the only thing these people ever do is fly through the sky and go to the beach. You know, I think the peak was the gladiator fight.
Yeah. You've perfectly summed up, though, season four, haven't you? The concept was too big. There's too much going on here. There's not enough attention to detail to make it work.
What about the equipment?
Coming later.
And the techno personnel?
No personnel. This is a vert thing. Run for verts, by verts.
It's not just for them. It's for everyone.
This is all out of date.
We need more. You have to tell him. He still listens to you.
You think so? The only person he listens to is Ebony. Reckon I'll be getting my notice to quit any day now.
You mean that?
Why are you doing this?
I told you.
No. I mean, spending your time with them.
Later, she overhears Ram offering Jay's job to a stunned Ebony, and in a conversation with Dre, gets drunk and propositions him. So, yeah, panel, how do you react to Java's world begin to crumble around her, as well as the confirmation we get here that Jay knew that Phase 4 was getting the city hooked, and not the so-called hospitals? Like, what is going on here?
I'll start with a positive. The positive is that even though the bar is in hell, as Tamsin has so eloquently put,
thank you,
Java is the most interesting thing happening here, and we don't get enough of her.
Yeah. We don't get a reaction to how she feels about Siva not being around anymore.
Right.
I mean,
Java's the most compelling character, and we don't spend enough time with her, and I feel like she should have been, like, the POV we were following this whole episode.
Yeah. And the reason why she's drinking is probably because she's now alone with Ebony and Ram, and she's getting squeezed out because there's no Siva anymore.
But that's the positive. Java. Java's the positive. Who could have thunk it that I would be calling Java the positive? Java, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for all the horrible things I've said about you for the last 20 years. You deserved so much better.
Java is the highlight of this whole season.
She is. She's like the MVP of the season and the most squandered potential ever. So there's my positive.
What about your negative?
Everything else. Oh my God. Okay, I'll start with the hospital scene. This is another one of those places where there were important scenes that we should have seen, that should have been filmed, discussions. Now, we got to go back to Celine demanding a hospital and schools from Ram. And Ram asking her that important question, who's going to run this stuff? And what does Celine say? I will find these people.
Yeah.
And yet she's the first person. She's got nothing organized whatsoever. She's looking at the hospital like she's never seen it before.
Mm.
Where are the people you round up to clean up? You didn't pick a place and get people already working to clean it up. You waited till the day supplies were going to be delivered. Now, because of the way it's filmed, I can believe that Celine believed in the beginning that she would have to do all this work. But then Ram told Jay, hey, all your hospitals and stuff, it's getting done. And then Jay could have told Celine, oh, you don't have to worry about all that because we're going to provide it. That's part of our plan. That's part of our regime. And that's why Celine hasn't prepared anything. She hasn't found any workers. She hasn't scouted the place. She hasn't cleaned it up or anything because Jay gave her the impression that they wouldn't be doing it on their own. But we needed to see that because it doesn't make sense for them to arrive at this hospital and Celine to be the most shocked out of the three of them at the mess that they're dealing with.
Yeah.
And also be the one scrambling the whole episode being like, oh my gosh, we don't have any workers and da da da. And it's like, Celine, you said you were going to do this. So we're missing that conversation where Jay told her she wouldn't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
What did you think being city leader was going to be, Celine?
I know. Like, what the frick?
Can I also add about the medication when they picked them up and they went, these are out of date. What did you expect? Like, there will be no in-date medication. No one is producing this anymore.
That's another discussion that's missing. She had to have been under the impression that the technos were making medications.
Right, that's what it felt like.
Like, where did you get that information? When did that conversation happen?
Yep.
There's so many steps. I also want to pick up on some wording, some interesting wording. When Java says to Jay, there's going to be no techno involvement, there's going to be no one of the technos working there in the hospital, because it's a hospital that's staffed by verts for verts. And I feel like Jay should have taken Java over to a corner and basically said, so am I out now then? Am I a vert? Is this it? And she could have turned around and said to him the line of dialogue that she still has, which is basically, I don't know, I expect my notice any day. I can neither confirm nor deny. Because that's what it sounded like. If somebody says that this is a hospital for vert staff by vert, and you are the one of the people who's going to be running the hospital, that's, you've been sacked, babe. Or is that just me?
No, you're right. There's more words. There's so many more conversations that need to be happening. That's why I said it felt like this, watching this whole episode was like just flipping through channels and getting snippets of conversation and shots out of context. Because together they don't make sense.
No.
And Jay is still confused over the fact that Ram didn't deliver on a promise. It's like, I thought you guys had done this before. I'm so sick of that coming up all the time in the back of my head. I thought they'd done this before.
Mm-hmm.
And Jay got nothing in writing, and he spends the whole time confused and begging for this thing and always being like, wait, it's not going the way I thought. And them never having the conversation of why isn't this going the way it's gone in the past? Even a conversation where they've never reached this phase before. Like, I would accept that. A conversation where this is a city, for whatever reason, the tech is finally there, where they can actually attempt these phases.
Mm-hmm.
But have the conversation of what it is they've accomplished in the past that would lead Jay to believe that they can do this now and to be frustrated that it's not getting done. But I'm sorry. I don't have words anymore. This is so bad. This is so bad. And Celine, I had faith in you. I gave you props that you deserve to have this role because you are the best equipped as a character to be in this role for this story and everything you've gone through. And it would be so poetic for you to be in this role. But you are such a disappointment. It's not even your fault. It's the writers giving you nothing to work with. As a city leader, again, you did not prep. You did not find people to work at this hospital. You didn't have the place cleaned out in preparation for the hospital that Ram promised you could organize, you know. At the end of the day, the only thing he was supposed to deliver to you was the medication. You said you'd get the workers. You'd find the people to do this. And you did no prep work. And you're the first to fall into despair as to what you're supposed to do. And it's Dee. Dee's the one who has to come up with the idea of, dude, let's use our broadcast to find people. Celine, that should have been yours. That you should have already have done this. Like, why? Why?
I mean, I will defend Celine slightly, and I will say she was dealing with a lot that day. Her boyfriend had tried to jump off a roof.
Yeah, but she should have arranged it.
What about yesterday?
Earlier.
What about yesterday? And the day before? And the day before?
Just in regards to her falling into despair, not the prep work she should have done. Yeah, she should have done that, right? But I think in terms of her becoming despondent and full of despair, and the work that she now has to do that she didn't do before, I can kind of understand because she's had a lot on.
And all of this could have been fixed if you just confirm that she was told she wouldn't have to.
Yeah.
Because Jay was like, don't worry about it. This is what the technos are going to provide. And then she'd be like, oh, great. I don't have to get a bunch of amateur surgeons to run a hospital. Awesome.
Oh, I'm just gonna say you made a really good point about Dee being the one coming forward to basically, you know, cheerlead Celine into believing this could happen. But like, that's all Dee is, isn't she? She's just a cheerleader. She's a cheerleader to Lex. She comes in and she's a cheerleader to Patch. Who's her cheerleader?
I would have liked to see that scene. I would have liked to see Dee make that suggestion. I would have liked to see that broadcast.
Yeah, that's what we needed to say.
It's a throwaway line later where, you know, Celine says later, oh, you know, don't worry about it. Dee came up with the idea to do this and we've got volunteers coming out of our ears. You know what I mean? And it feels like it was an add-in later. Again, this whole episode is cobbled together.
And adding to why we needed to see that, because I think you succinctly said why we needed to see that scene, because it would have been interesting. But it also shows that there's still active rebellion out in the city, because rather than going and watching the game or getting scanned, people saw this, they saw the shout out for help, and they went and helped.
Yeah.
So there's still that nugget of, yeah, we will use the techno stuff, but we're not going to sign up to everything.
I mean, I think of all the, if she had been scouting for hospital, you know, hospital space, why not a smaller clinic, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say that. It doesn't actually need to be in a hospital. And the sort of state that most of these hospitals, because it was a virus.
Right.
So why people were dying in these hospitals. So they're going to be in a complete state because people will have
probably bodies still in there.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, unclaimed bodies and then looters after, you know, young people looting afterwards. So yeah, any space that you can keep clean and tidy, have access to and from and allow, you know, a number of beds in will basically do. Because they're not going to be doing surgery. They're not, you know, they're essentially going to be an ER or over here we would call an A&E, and it's going to be minor injuries.
Yeah, you know, and like I would have loved a throwback to Dal's family clinic.
Yep.
Something small and simple that actually has meaning and she knows it exists. She knows where it is. You know, something simple like that would have been the best bet. Why would you take over an old hospital, which would have been ground zero at the end of the world?
That's
the last place you would go. We know there was no body cleanup at the end of the virus. I'm sure there are massive places that you avoid because of the bodies.
Okay, So now there's a scene where they actually go to somewhere that's like Dal's family clinic, and there's a photo of Dal there gathering dust with his family, and Jay picks up and goes, I wonder who these people were, and Celine sees it, and she puts it, you know, she wipes the dust of it, and she puts it back, you know, where it needs to be.
Why? Why are you doing this to us?
The paper.
Can you imagine?
With the sports.
Tamsin.
Why? Why are you teasing me with what could have been so much better? Why?
Well, those might have been.
I just suggested overall, and no, you had to take us in deep. Why are you twisting the knife, Tamsin? That is unkind. So unkind.
That's a missed opportunity.
Not fair. That is not fair. I mean, you
that's
couldn't
major
even
missed opportunity.
Like stock footage of when he was there. You had to film some of that, you know? And why? Oh, no, no. That's so not nice. That's not nice.
I'm sorry, but like I couldn't have. The minute you said it, it just planted the seed in my head, and the pictures followed.
Yep.
You know.
You're just talking about a better show. I don't know.
I mean,
so mean, so mean.
So listen, write that fan fiction, and then share it to us.
It's all the alternate timelines.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Let's head to the lighthearted part of this episode.
I can't stay here anymore. I can't.
Come on. I've got some good news for you. Ram doesn't want you anymore. You're free.
Free? Then you can take me to come live with you.
Back at the mall?
Yes, the mall.
No, it's not exactly like that, Siva. And I don't know if the others would...
Please, Lex.
Later, Siva ropes the kids in to do her laundry. Under threat of torture. And an angry Celine exposes her, telling her that her relationship with Lex gives her one chance with them, but she'd better start changing fast. So, yeah. Siva's introduction to the mall, what did you make of it?
I don't have a lot to say about this, but I do just want to add something I really dislike in the tribe is when they bring a character in and they've got suitcases full of clothes and they specifically say, you know, her suitcases of clothes, and we see her and there are piles of clothes that come with her. And then she never wears anything other than that outfit she changes into. Like, at least with Zandra, they kept it consistent. She had a lot of clothes, and she used to mix and match the outfit she had. So, like, when she'd run out of everything to wear once, she'd wear it. Like, we saw her wearing lots of different variations.
Mm-hmm.
In this, we see her handling clothes, and she never wears any of them. And it's just so annoying. Because, like, he didn't need to go to the hotel and get her bags. It could have been that he couldn't go to the hotel and get her bags. And she managed to cobble this outfit together from bits she found around the mall. We didn't need to see this. It's just, it winds me up every time. Sorry.
It's a lazy storytelling point. They've done it before, too, where they brought up the whole getting someone to do their laundry under duress, even though this person never changes their clothes. And it's like, there's no way you would have this much laundry. Like, if you're gonna do it, if you're gonna have someone, like, maybe they're underclothes or whatever, their nightwear, their sheets, their pillowcases, something like that, make it realistic of what it is they actually need to have washed on a regular basis. And the fact that she has all of this luggage that he was able to smuggle out of the motel, another scene I would have actually liked to see, him having to finesse. If you're going to go for comedy, I want to see him smuggling her entire luggage cases out of the motel. And it's like, we've seen her wear one thing the whole time, except when she's in reality space. We've never even seen this woman in a nightgown, like sleepwear. Like, she has one little vert outfit she would wear to go visit Lex sometimes when she's sneaking around, and that's it. Why? This is, it's comical without making sense, and it doesn't go with the tone of the episode. It's just thrown in there, and it could have worked, but it's just, it doesn't make any sense that she has all this stuff and never wears it, and it needs to be washed. How is all this stuff already dirty? How does she have laundry today?
Mm.
Like, you never wear these clothes. They shouldn't need to be washed. at all. This is just silly and stupid and lazy storytelling. There was a better way to introduce Siva into the mall and show how self-centered she is and how she's going to have to fit in, find a way to fit in with Verts than this trope that they keep falling back on. These kids have armfuls of laundry and it's like, when did you ever wear this stuff? When did it get dirty? I would buy it if she was like moving into this place and she's like, this, it's gross in here. I want all of his bedding cleaned before I sleep in it. You know, I feel gross because I was at the barn. She doesn't even, she just spent a night in a barn where she was scared of a rotten blueberry pie and doesn't immediately think, I want a bath. She could, there's so many things she could have demanded these kids to do for her when she got there that would have given a, given the same overall sense that Siva is a very selfish person and doesn't quite belong here, doesn't understand teamwork, and isn't an above threatening people, you know, without the stupid laundry supply. It could have been like, I want a bath. I want food. You need to do these things for me. And that would have all worked and done the exact same thing. Also, please explain to me why she's attacking a pie with a pitchfork when she has a laser. I don't.
Good point.
Oh my gosh, that was so stupid. That was so dumb.
That was dumb as hell. Sorry.
She gives him the pitchfork and goes, I'll back you up. And it's like, why did you grab the pitchfork when you had the advantage of never getting close to this thing? You could, whatever it was you thought it was, you could shoot it from a distance. You got a pitchfork so you could get into melee combat with the pie? So dumb. So stupid. There were better ways to handle Siva. There was another thing you could have given her that she could force the kids to do for her. That would have made more sense in this reality.
For me, it kind of felt like they purposely went for the laundry because it's something we've seen Ebony do to the kids.
And it didn't make sense then. That's what I'm saying. Like, they fall on it. It's a lazy trope that doesn't work in their world.
It doesn't, but it does show us something about, okay, these girls apparently never had to do that when they were, you know, pre-virus.
And that's great, but they could choose something that makes sense in their world that they've never had to do before, like getting themselves food. She could demand they make her a meal, anything that would make sense other than this hotel lobby of luggage, of clothes that she never wears, shouldn't be dirty in the first place. And if you really want laundry, again, be like, I want everything in this room clean before I sleep in here. You know, I want someone to draw me a bath and get me dinner. And then she used that to threaten the kids. You go take care of the things or I will torture you. That would all make sense and serve the same purpose. I also hate the fact that once again, you set up a conflict that is immediately solved with zero tension. It's actually a conflict that she's going to torment these kids and threaten them into doing things for them. And it's immediately solved. Boom. It's done. Celine finds out, tells Siva, knock it off. That's not going to happen. And it's like, where is the tension?
Yeah.
My mind just went, Celine, did you never ask the younger kids to do anything for you?
Come on. It's not, it doesn't even.
Not under threat of torture, though.
No, come on. A new person comes in and threatens to torture the kids. Of course, Celine's going to be like, if you ever do that again, if you're going to stay here, absolutely not. That is not the same as asking the kids to do a favor. It's not the same.
I've got another question as well, which I was really confused by. So please explain this to me. So when Celine finds out about the torture, she has that line where she says, he brought her here, when she's referring to Siva. And that made it seem as if she knew about Lex and Siva, which I don't think she did.
I'd like to know when it became common knowledge that he's dating Siva. Because as far as we've known, he's kept it a secret from everyone at the mall that there's a relationship.
And only Dee knows.
Yeah, nobody knows that he and Siva are a couple. Nobody knows. And like when they were watching him lose in the fight, nobody knew what was behind all of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so like, when did it become common knowledge? They should be confused at Siva's presence, not resigned to it. They should be like, who, why did you bring her here though? And he should have had to explain either we're in a relationship Or that, again, this could have been a nice, another nugget of tension. He has to explain away why he brought Siva there. He could have been like, well, Ram is threatening her. She doesn't want to be with the technos anymore. Isn't that what we do as mall rats? Blah, blah, blah. And then later they're caught kissing or something and they finally put it together. Like, you're dating her? Because it's never been expressed mm-hmm. to any of the mall rats that he's in a relationship with her. And yet this episode, everybody knows they're a couple and they're not really surprised he brought Siva here.
Yeah.
They're annoyed, but they're not surprised.
Yeah.
You know, they all act like they're aware of the relationship he's had with her this whole time. And I'm like, when? When did you find out? Because Lex never talks to you guys.
Well, again, I'm going to say it feels like Lex is being kept away from everybody else. It does. Because there are so few.
Well, of course. Again, and that's what I'm saying. Like, when did they find out that he's in a relationship and that it makes sense he'd bring her here even if they don't want her here? Like, when did that happen? It's just common knowledge now.
Well, because we even had Celine not that long ago basically crediting, saying Lex must have really loved Tyson because he hasn't filled her space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This whole episode is just nonsensical.
Yeah.
It doesn't just insult your intelligence. It literally hands your ass to you for ever caring and trying to keep up with the narrative. You're just on the ground outside the bar being like, I'm sorry I cared. I'm so sorry. Why did you do that to me?
It just feels like we're missing complete episodes in between episodes.
Yeah. Well, I was so confused today. I was like, I know I watched the last episode because I wanted to hang myself afterward. And what did I miss? What is going on? But I don't mind that Siva's introduction into the mall is bad. I just wish there was more effort put into why it's bad. It's so lazily done. Because it's in character for her, you know? But it's like, there were better ways to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have taken your time with it. Showing that she's going to be a problem. Yeah.
That's the thing they don't want to do. To take their time with anything.
Crazy.
I mean, even when she come in and Pride has rightfully the right reaction to like, what the frick is she doing here? Why did you bring her here? Mm. She's the first to be like, Lex, this was a bad idea. He told you it was a bad idea, Siva. He very clearly didn't want to bring you to his home. And the minute you meet, you know, adversity, you're just like, this was a bad idea. Well, where else is he supposed to take you?
Well, you know, Lex's sexy hideout.
I was wondering that. Once she's no longer in danger. Now, he took her away from the hideout because she was in danger, right?
Yeah.
And that's why he took her to the farm. And now she's not in danger. Ram just doesn't care anymore for whatever reason. He doesn't care. So why can't you take her to the hideout? It's more comfortable. She likes it there. Why not just take her there? Why does the hideout suddenly out of the picture? This is all just to get her in the mall. It doesn't matter if it makes sense. She's just in the mall now.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's like, you can take her anywhere now. She's not in danger. You can take her anywhere.
He could have simply put her at the hideout, and at some point, for him not coming back as quickly as he wanted to, she could have wandered after him. But taking her straight to the mall, it's...
Yeah, I'm just like, ugh, whatever.
There is no sense in this episode.
No.
There
is just...
There's an episode missing in this episode.
There's an episode they forgot to write in this
episode. There's episodes, plural, missing. It's like...
Is the comprehension in the room with us? And honestly, I would like to see more work done to show Ebony's growing influence and control over Ram. Mm. I want to see more evidence of it. Because right now, it's literally her just being in the same space as him. She's not even saying anything that, but even shows that she's trying to have influence over it. She's not trying. She's literally in his space because he demands she's in his space. She's kind of like, in the same way that Tyson was a hostage with the Guardian. That's Ebony. She's just like, he wants me here. She's filing her nails, for Pete's sake. I want to see more evidence that she's squeezing people out. And that's what's making Ram just become so enamored with her. And she's just saying things. And he's just like, oh, this is the wife. I want to see that. And instead, she's putting zero effort in and he's squeezing people out with no real reason for why he's doing it.
And yeah, speaking of Ram, finally able to confront Ved, Ram takes him to task for his heavy-handed tactics in the scanning center.
I decided that...
You don't decide anything. You're here to follow orders. My orders.
What do you know? I have to make it happen down there on the ground, and it is happening. As of tonight, the game is everywhere. Over half the city is being scanned. I'm doing my job, and I don't need you and your new wife telling me I'm not.
Ram backs down, but warns Ved against crossing him. So yeah, I mean, I kind of thought it was kind of, this whole tension was quite sudden, obviously due to the backstage reasons, but what did you think of this scene between Ved and Ram?
I think it would have benefited to actually getting a real reaction from Ved about Chloe's materializing out of existence. That could have just been fixed with a conversation that he'd had to leave the space she was in and returned, and there was somebody else there. And he doesn't have to say that to Ram, but to have an actual reaction with Ved being like, what the frick is going on? Where did Chloe go? That would explain why he walks in there so heated and ready for a confrontation with Ram, you know, because we see that his dander is up. He's confused. He's emotional. What the frick, you know? But we don't get a reaction from Ved wondering what the frick happened, you know? And so, yeah, you're just like, where did this is just cobbled together. And again, we don't even know why he's forcing people to be scanned anyway. That conversation's missing of how we got here. And I don't know what day it is, you guys. I don't, is this the same day as the last episode when they were trying to scan people? I don't know. Is this the same day that, no, it's not the same day that Pride was tortured because they went through a night. I don't know where I am.
Yeah.
I want to go home.
Ask a question about this scanning. Is this I know I shouldn't try and make sense, but I'm going to ask this question anyway. Is the fact that Ram basically said, I will sort Ved out when he found out that he was forcing people to be scanned, and then kind of Chloe went missing. Are they linked? Or is that just me?
Oh, no. I don't know. I figured he got rid of her because she was a distraction, you know? But again, that's just me trying. That's just me trying to add reason to his actions. It doesn't make sense because there's other verts he should have gotten rid of. Why Chloe? Ved's still doing his job. Of all your technos who are distracted by a vert, Ved is still doing his job. So why get rid of his vert when you could have disappeared the entirety of the Mallrats? Why are you working with them? But Chloe's the one who was like, she's the problem. It doesn't make sense, but I'm trying to be like, okay, maybe that's why he got rid of Chloe. But, you know, when I think about
the cooperative mole rat.
Right, like, you're still dealing with her entire tribe, and she was the least troublesome. She was practically already on your side, so there was no reason to get rid of Chloe, right?
She was there, the perfect spokesman. Like, seriously, don't even try and make sense of this.
Pride tried to blow up your power plant. Why didn't you get rid of him? No, Chloe, she's the issue, right?
I mean, I did like the fact that because of how Ved, you know, because of what's happened, Ved has a go at Ram, and Ram's kind of the way he responds to it. So he doesn't lose his temper. He gets really close to him, and then he's like, if you ever speak to me again like that, I'm paraphrasing, by the way, they'll never find you. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
The pieces of you won't even be found. I like that. I liked how they acted in that scene, both of them, because you could see the minute Ved had said all that stuff, he realized that he had said all of the wrong stuff to the wrong person. And Ram's response was equally chilling, as we have seen him be, you know, because sometimes he goes off like a rocket and sometimes he's super menacing and really gets up in your face to tell you this. But other than that, yeah, it just feels...
I agree. They're good together. Too bad it's in this episode, in this season.
It's
completely wasted. Like, whatever.
Because Yeah.
Next episode,
there's no external context.
Yeah, like the next episode, the dynamic will be completely different, whatever. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is good performance wasted on the worst episode.
Like, at this moment in time, Ved doesn't know that it's Ram that has done this to Chloe. Mm. So this whole context is just an argument. It's just like
that. Hey. It makes even less sense then.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's just,
I mean,
he doesn't know where Chloe is. And he doesn't know that Ram's involved. So he's like, so where is this coming from? This heat to Ram? Like,
that's why I'm saying we needed a reaction shot from Ved, you know, responding to the fact that Chloe is missing, that he was right there when she was being hooked up and then had to leave for whatever reason, if he, you know, were trying to make sense of it, and returns, and it's not her, it's a complete stranger that he's never seen before, begging to get back in the game, and he has to improv live, get a reaction to him after it's all
he's
over.
He's just like, where's Chloe gone?
And like, what the frick is going on? Even in that reaction shot, you can have him suspecting that Ram is behind it, because he knows Ram, you know, and what he tends to do, and just something to explain why he goes in there, you know, guns blazing, you know, and isn't cautious with his words, isn't careful, you know, and stuff like that. But there is nothing. You're just flipping channels to random scenes and actions happening out of context.
Mm.
They just happen to be all in the same episode.
Yeah.
And honestly, if you just randomly split up every scene we've just watched, you would never guess they were in the same episode. You would think they were from just different spots within the season, and that they make sense when you see them where they belong. But no. Not at all.
You're expecting things we can't have, Liz.
I never expect... My expectations just keep getting. I the bar is so low, and they still keep going lower. I don't know how that's possible.
I remember this moment being bad, but not this bad. I didn't realize it was this shoddily done. I'm shocked. Really, I'm shocked how badly it was done. And yeah, sorry. That brings us to our final thoughts of the episode. With Chloe nowhere in sight, May, the actual May, mind you, is eager to get back into the game. On her next attempt, as an engrossed audience across the city watches on, she narrowly beats the stage and gains the prize. So yeah, this ending, what did you make of it?
I'm sorry, I'm hysterically laughing. Because who else was it going to be? It wasn't going to be anyone else, was it?
Oh.
I mean, you know, she was, I mean, okay. So firstly, you know, like we've already said, you know, the Morat-centric nature of swapping Chloe into May or Chloe becoming May, whatever, okay? And we know that season two Chloe would not have been down for becoming May. I'm just going to put that out there. and the fact that the symbol is the pentagram that is the symbol of the mole rats. But the confusion for me is when Chloe seemed to be driving May's avatar around, it seemed as if that actually was May. I don't know. We've talked about that.
This was May.
Right, yeah. So this is actually
this last
May
scene
now.
Was May.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm
happy confusion, everyone.
What's going on? It's so contrived. And of course she was going to win, because look at the state of the episode. Like, look at this, and then tell me that they even for one second sat there and thought, it'll be somebody else that wins. That woman that she was talking to at the beginning, that blonde woman, she'll win. Don't be ridiculous. Of course they will win. And what does it mean? Does that mean the game's over when there's a point to the Blues? That wasn't explained. Anyway.
It's okay, Tamsin. Only dogs can hear you now. Oh. You okay?
I think that's my first ever rant on here.
Therapeutic, it's okay. This is a safe space.
Ooh. I don't have the energy to try to make sense of any of this. And this isn't the day for it. And the episode's not even worth the real effort. I could sit there and speculate why the pentagram is involved and, you know, the subconscious things that he might have gained from May's mind. All I'm thinking is, where did she come from? When did she get shipped in? Why her, of all people? And all that jazz. And I just, what gets me, this is what the last scene does for me. I remember seeing this shot in the promo of May getting this key before I knew what the season was going to be about, really. And I remember thinking, oh, wow, like, what are the Mallrats going to have to do to beat the bad guys this time? And I remember thinking that this shot of May, you know, doing this really cool in the tunnels, fighting and getting this special key might have played, a role in the takedown of the new bad guys. So when I saw it in context, when I saw what it really was, it's just a kind of draw, drop, open, like, oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
This is what it was.
This is what it was. Okay. Yeah, I have nothing. I have nothing left to give, and this episode doesn't deserve any more of my sweat and tears. I suppose it's sort of a fun train wreck to talk about with you guys.
Yeah, I was definitely, that was the highlight of coming into this episode, knowing that we were going to talk about it. And that got me through when I watched it.
Yeah. I was like, how the heck are we going to discuss this?
Oh. And hopefully, like, the listeners feel the same, that they go on this journey with us and we all kind of just collapse in a heap of nonsensical moments that happen for us. I think the saddest thing is we've once again wasted our life on this episode. Moments that we'll never get back on this episode. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, let's throw it out there. Like, audience, what did you make of this episode? What did you make of this being Chloe's final episode? Like, that's no...
Yeah, I'm not even...
What would you have liked it to be?
I'm not even mad. I'm just like, that happened.
Yeah, good point.
It's just a state of, it's a weird state of shock and disbelief.
Yeah.
Like, this happened. This is an episode. Somebody, they shot this. They wrote this. They cobbled it together and said, here. And I can't believe this happened. I'd want my name taken off of it when I saw the final product. You know what I feel like? I feel like George Lucas when he saw the final cut of episode one, and the room is just silent and George is just staring. Like, you can find this footage of his first reaction to seeing his prize put together, and he goes, I think we went a little far in some places. That was the only response he had to finally making the Star Wars he'd been longing to make for 20-something years. He just stared in shock, and everyone staring at him because they knew it was bad too. But it was his vision, and all George could say was his hands are literally on his face as he just stares at the screen and be like, I think we went a little far in some places. And that's how I feel. I'd be like, this is it. This is what we created. This is it all put together. I don't know what happened.
Still, we've only got 17 episodes left.
Don't threaten me. Stop it. You stop it right now.
Of this season.
I'm not gonna think about this until next week when there's a half hour before we have to start the podcast. I refuse to think about this show until then. I won't. You guys usually watch it before I do, and I'll see your comments, and I'd be like, oh god, what am I in for now?
Yeah, I've seen a preview. Yeah. Good luck with more Chloe May nonsense.
Oh, wow. That's something to look forward to. Yay!
But yeah, final thoughts. Chloe, the actress, she deserved better. The character deserved better. And I feel bad for everyone who had to work on this. Yeah, I just feel bad for everyone who had to work on this. You got a lot of talented people, and this is their name is on this. You know what I mean? Like, they all showed up to do their jobs, and this is what.
That brings Series 4, Episode 35 to a close. Thank you very much to the panel, and I mean that. And you can show your support by clicking on that like and subscribe and following us on all the major platforms. You can also leave us a comment or get in touch if you'd like to take part in a future episode of the podcast yourself. Just search for thetribe.co.uk or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. You can also throw us a donation. Just head on over to buymeacoffee.com/thetribe.co.uk. And we'll see you next time for Episode 36. Until then, bye.
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 Bye.